everyone, to Good Night and Good Game, your source for geek news for the week that was. I'm your host, James, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Hector.
Hello.
This week on the show, after the news, we're finally getting into our spoilerific review of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Before we start, don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg, where as a patron of our show, you can suggest topics for us to talk about. I'll be putting a date on the calendar this week to knock out a bunch of Patreon content, so look forward to that. Now, with all that out of the way, it is time for The Prelude.
Prelude!
Hey everyone, welcome to The Prelude. It's time to dive into what we've been up to this week, what we've been playing, what we've been watching, what's been occupying our free time, and what has been making us happy. Hector, what do you got for me?
Oh man, so like I started a new job since the last time we talked. Yeah. There's been a lot of music listening, but mostly because I commute to work now, which is a new thing that I'm learning about and loving and having to do again. It's hard to find time to watch things when I get home. So mostly I've been doing comfort stuff. Been catching up on Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. Been playing a lot of Overwatch. Been playing a lot of Deep Rock Galactic.
Yep.
I can't say I have too much to talk about that we've been doing, that I've been doing, except what we've been doing.
Right.
Right? Yeah. That like The Mandalorian is out and it's fresh and I'm loving the new episodes. The Last of Us just wrapped up. We promise no spoilers
we
in this episode.
We are going to do like a boss room on The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We will do a whole Last of Us recap for everyone who loved the game and loved the show. We would love to talk to you about it. I have a lot of things to say about this.
A lot of feelings about The Last
about
of Us.
This fucking show and like and what is to come and the discourse being back. And like it's 2009 again, but for TV.
I know, right?
It's yeah. Great. But yeah, that's been my last 2 weeks. It's just kind of a work and then like comfort stuff at home. It's been good.
Yeah, sure. It's been pretty small for me. I'll save the big one for last. Mm-hmm. Again, I've been busy with work. You've been busy with work. A lot of things going on. I've been continuing on the Superman and Lois train. It's been great.
Well, Superman and Lois is dope. Watch it.
I've gotten back into playing FTL, so I've been playing a lot of FTL. A show that I've been watching, though, and a lot of people out there that have probably watched this show is like, you just started watching this. I just started watching the show Leverage with a friend. And she got me into it. And she's like, hey, you got to check this show out. The show Leverage is about these like thieves that are all like bad people that all get together to do good things. And it is a hilarious show. It was made, it started around 2008. It is very of its time.
It's a 2008 ass show.
It is a 2008 ass show. But at the same time, it was popular enough that the series wrapped and recently got a like new season.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So there's a new Leverage show that just came out because it was that popular.
There is enough to like bring it back, even though it's from 2008, which is rare.
And
we don't bring
like, it had like six or seven seasons or something. Oh. Like it had a run.
Okay. Okay.
And was popular enough that it's been brought back finally. So I've been watching that. It's been absolutely hilarious. But the other thing that we did this week, we did together, and we went to go see Scream 6. Now, we're going to say no spoilers.
Hang on. I have to stop you there.
Okay.
Before we get into Scream 6.
Okay.
We also went to go see Cocaine Bear.
Oh, we did. We saw Cocaine Bear.
We went to go see Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
And real quick, because it's been a long 2 weeks, guys. I literally remembered while you were talking, and I was like, I bet we didn't mention this. Cocaine Bear was fucking awesome.
It was so good.
Yeah. Elizabeth Banks is a genius. She's an excellent director well as a very funny person and an excellent actress, but she is a fucking director. This movie was funny. It was entertaining. It had all the right beats. I'm petting a cat right now if you're listening to the radio. But yeah, a Cocaine Bear was fucking awesome.
It was amazing. Cocaine Bear was everything that is on the tin. If you looked at that trailer or heard the name and went, that movie sounds stupid, you will probably not like it.
Yeah, but please know, if you think this movie is some stupid American movie bullshit, this is based on a true story.
Yep.
It's not stupid American movie bullshit, it's stupid American real bullshit. This happened, a bear got a hold of cocaine dropped by drug smugglers, got really high and like ransacked a good area of a town, and this movie is based on that, although like done up to 11 and very funny a lot of comedy.
What the actual Cocaine Bear did was very different,
but its character actress Margot Martindale is in it. Like this is an A+ comedy, dark comedy / like creature feature, because like that bear does some fucking cocaine. Like so much cocaine.
That was some Miami Vice level of cocaine.
Well, this is fucking Tony Montana with his face down in the pile on his desk level cocaine doing that this bear does.
It's so good.
It was a lot of fun. So yeah, we saw Cocaine Bear. Highly recommend it. So Scream 6.
Yeah, Scream 6. No spoilers. We will not spoil Scream. I did not think that I would go into a sixth movie of a horror franchise and go, that might be one of the best ones they've made so far.
Yeah, straight up, like, I literally walked into the movie being like, is this really six? It feels like there's been more than that. Right. And then we got to the end, and I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like, that was not just a great Scream movie. That might be the best Scream movie and one of the best horror movies I've seen in a while.
Brilliantly written. It kept you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
There were twists. There were turns. Scream 5 was good, and we praised it when it came out. So we're like, it's the new cast. We got to get adjusted to the new cast.
Yeah.
I understand.
But what we didn't know at the time was that we had Jenna Ortega.
Right.
Yeah. Because at the time, it was like, who's that?
Right.
And now, in a post-Wednesday world, we're like, fucking Jenna Ortega. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
And wow, did she sell that movie.
Oh, so killed it. Absolutely killed it.
Everything about it. And it is such a love letter to not only Scream fans, but also to horror movie fans in general. There are just references everywhere. Yeah, everything about Scream 6 was just... Yeah. I can't overstate it. Like,
no, it was great. Like they bring characters back. Hayden Panettiere is back, obviously.
Oh, so good.
So good. She was literally, like... She's one of the victims from one of the opening scenes in a previous Scream movie.
Yeah.
And, like, she comes back to do stuff, and you're like, oh, wow, we're fucking going deep. And not only that, but, like,
She was thought of as dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we all thought she was dead until she showed up in the movie.
Yeah.
Like our buddy Ross literally laughed out loud when she showed up on screen, because he's like, oh!
It was a fan theory that she was still alive because she died off screen.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, she didn't die on screen, which is, like, a thing in Scream movies. Yep. But I also really want to shout out Melissa Barrera, who plays the older sister in Scream 6. I love her from In the Heights, which, if you're a fan of musicals and you own HBO Max and you haven't seen it, you owe it to yourself to watch In the Heights. It's a musical based on a Lin-Manuel Miranda musical about living in New York during the blackout. Like it's good shit. She's incredibly talented. She can sing at like an angel. She can dance. That is a talent. And she's in your Scream movie acting opposite Jenna Ortega and absolutely killing it.
Yep.
So like, yeah, this was a wonderful movie and I can't recommend it enough.
Yep. And that is everything we have for the prelude this week, but stick with us as we get to the news in the Weekly Raid.
The Weekly Raid.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. It's time for the Weekly Raid, your roundup of this week's geek news. Kicking things off this week, South by Southwest is happening here in Austin, and that means ton of film and movie, or in TV
oh, yeah.
and movie news and video game news.
Yeah.
It is...
It's a big news week because the people are doing stuff.
Yeah.
It's not exactly GDC or E3, but like there are movies going on that no one's ever seen before. There are games going on that no one's seen before. Mm. Like directors who have not talked to people before. There's a lot happening.
We just came back from being on Sixth Street where South By was in full effect.
Oh yeah. We literally could not talk on the phone because like we would have to leave downtown. That's how loud all the music is everywhere you go.
Yep. There was an interview with the director of the John Wick franchise. His name is Chad Selesky.
Mm-hmm.
He stated that after John Wick 4, the franchise will be on break for a while because there's both a TV show and another movie coming out in the John Wick universe.
Correct. We are getting The Continental, which I cannot wait for. That sounds like an amazing show and like some real world building potential.
Yeah, and we're getting The Ballerina, which John Wick or Keanu Reeves will make an appearance in.
Right. It goes back to if you haven't seen John Wick 3, it turns out that he was raised at a Russian ballet studio in New York, and that's where they taught him a lot of his shit. Like, not all of his shit, but like a lot of his shit. He's got some assassination on him. You can tell by his tattoos that like that's like the way he leans, but like I cannot wait for all of this. This all sounds amazing.
Yeah. But the big thing that he discussed was a little bit bigger deal to talk about in the middle of Texas.
Yeah.
Which was he does not believe that there is any reason these days for Hollywood to be using real guns on movie sets.
I mean, 100%. Like, that just makes perfect sense. Like, if you're using a prop that can fire a real bullet meant to end people's lives.
Right.
We have the technology.
Right.
We can build something different.
Yeah.
We can build something that only shoots blanks. We can build something that pretends it shoots blanks and doesn't. We can build something you can fire into someone's face on camera and then digitize everything else. Like, we're good at this now.
Right.
There's no reason for any of this to be happening in the year of our Lord 2023. And exactly. To be fair, there's no reason for this to have happened after, like, 2015.
And a lot of this comes down to the fact that there was that shooting that happened on the movie set with Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
And mind you, John Wick, if you've never seen it, John Wick is a movie that is all guns.
Oh, yeah. It's all guns to the face all the time. They're like headshots are like a drinking game in this franchise. And there's no reason to be using real guns for any of this.
Yeah. Actually, also shown at South by Southwest is an upcoming documentary called Satan Wants You. This documentary actually has footage from the 80s Satanic Panic era to show audiences how much impact a book called Michelle Remembers had on the cultural zeitgeist at the time.
Ooh.
The book Michelle Remembers was a bestseller. It was about Michelle Smith, who under hypnosis had memories, quote unquote, like memories of abuse and satanic rituals uncovered. This book was covered by news outlets all over the 80s, and that is what kicked off the Satanic Panic era. The documentary will also uncover the debunking of the book. But this is a book whose presence is still felt in the public today, even if we don't know about it.
Oh yeah, it's the Slaughterhouse, Animal House, the book that started the Civil War.
Yeah,
right. Like this is the same shit. And the problem that I have with it at this point is like books like that book had like a lot of reality to it, and it was in its way a documentary of the time. This shit is a lot like Oprah having on the doctor who said he half died and saw the face of God.
Right.
It's like, why are we promoting this? Why are we promoting some guy's like delusion?
Yeah.
Well, what's going on?
So this is a book that a lot of us don't know the existence of, but has actually culturally impacted us in more ways than we can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what they're going to explore in this documentary is not only the book, the debunking of the book, but also the spread of misinformation, which is one of the most important topics in the world right now.
Let's not forget that, you know, political parties of every persuasion love to use misinformation to either control their base or fight their opposition.
Exactly.
That's where we are.
The 90s sci-fi thriller Gattaca is going to be getting the small screen treatment and is being turned into a TV show at Showtime. Gattaca questioned the ethics surrounding genetically modifying humans and feels way more relevant now than it did when the film aired.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No spoilers for the recent episode of The Mandalorian, but one of the characters has a lot to do with cloning because, you know, cloning, it's Star Wars. That shit happens. This is like kind of the same thing. Gattaca has this idea of like, We if no one's ever seen the film Gattaca, the idea is when people don't give birth naturally and you follow a character who was a natural birth because his parents at the time thought that was the best thing that they could do, you know, and then they were kind of hippies and then that was the deal. But the thing is that this person that is born and like goes in life and has ambitions has like vastly increased a propensity for like heart disease and like he might be a smoker. He might be a lot of things that they in this timeline consider bad. And he, all he wants to do is be an astronaut and he has all of the capabilities to do so, but they would never let him in because he wasn't born under the right circumstances.
Right.
And that's Gattaca. This movie that came out in the 90s.
It was the 90s. It was released, I think, in 97?
Yeah, I know it was a 90s movie. Yeah. This movie screams to be a television show. Mm. And it screams to be a television show now. In a world where we have Severance, in a world where we have, you know, like so much good TV about the human condition in the workforce.
Right.
This is perfect. I love this. I can't wait. Gattaca deserves to be this and not just that movie from the 90s. It had that
Showtime level of budget.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It was announced this week that James Gunn will be directing the upcoming Superman Legacy film set to be released in 2025. Hmm? This will be the first post-reboot Superman film and will be released on July 11th, 2025, which is the same date as James Gunn's late father's birthday.
Mm. James Gunn has not made a bad superhero movie.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say yet. Mm-hmm. But like his entire career, he's never made a bad superhero movie. We were talking to a coworker earlier about how the fourth phase of the MCU has been like decidedly mid. Mm. But all the James Gunn movies are always good.
Yep.
They really always are. All the way down to the fucking holiday special.
Mm-hmm.
Or the parts of Thor: Love and Thunder, which I liked, that had the Guardians of the Galaxy, which James Gunn was in charge of.
Right.
Those parts were good. Mm-hmm. Those, not that the rest of the movie wasn't good. It just, it didn't live up to Ragnarok for me.
Sure.
But like, James Gunn has not missed yet when it comes to superheroes. You can tell he very much loves them. It, his movies are the ones I can watch over and over again. Just last weekend, for a bit of comfort, like I decided to throw on James Gunn's Suicide Squad, and I had just as good a time as I did in theaters because that movie fucking rules. I'm very excited for this. The holiday special was fucking dope. If any of you have Disney Plus and haven't watched a James Gunn fucking holiday special about the Guardians of the Galaxy, watch that.
Right.
It's hilarious and awesome and heartfelt. And I think I cried a little bit. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I was having such a good time. It's good shit. So I'm very excited for James Gunn Superman. Even though I don't trust literally anyone with Superman.
Yeah.
No one except for the people doing Superman and Lois, because that's fun.
Right.
But everyone else.
James Gunn might be able to nail it, though.
I think he can. I think he understands how much he understands Superman.
Yeah.
And he's willing to, you know, do different stories and accept help where he needs help with writing. I think he knows the DC characters enough to make a good one. And until I'm proven wrong, I'm on board with all of James Gunn's movies.
Yeah. The upcoming Batman animated series, Batman Caped Crusader, has been moved from HBO Max over to its new home at Amazon. Batman Caped Crusader will be a reimagining of the Batman mythology, and J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves, and Bruce Timm are all working on it.
Oh.
It is meant to evoke the 90s Batman the Animated Series vibes.
Shit. I mean,
interesting choice that it's moving from HBO over to Amazon.
I think they
It had to be financial.
I believe if they thought they had something that had mass appeal, they would want to move it from everyone with an HBO Max subscription to everyone with an Amazon Prime subscription.
Which is like everybody in the world.
Literally, everyone I know has an Amazon Prime subscription. So they all have Amazon Video. If they can get people to go there and watch their Batman stuff, yeah, I'm in. Yeah. I trust what's going on, obviously, because Bruce Timm and because Batman the Animated Series is the best Batman has ever been.
Right.
And everything that's good about Batman that happened after it was copying it. Although all the Rocksteady games,
I say hand to God, not that's a phrase I would ever use, but to me, Batman Mask of the Phantasm is, to me, and this is my opinion, internet, the best Batman movie ever made.
I you know what? If you said that to me, I would be like, oh yeah, easily in my top three, could be the first.
Yep.
It's an incredible fucking movie in an incredible series that is more, that the opening to Batman the Animated Series is more Batman than most Batman movies.
Right? You just hear that bum, and you just like, your brain just like, yes, I'm locked in, here it is.
That opening literally never has a Batman logo and it never says Batman.
Yeah.
You just watch it, it's about 20 seconds long and you're like, this is a Batman story.
Yep.
We don't need more than this. We understand what we're about to watch. We're about to watch some fucking Batman.
I know what I'm about, son.
Yep. And that's why. And that's why I will go to Amazon, which I don't watch a lot of things on, and I will watch this show.
More things are coming to Amazon that sound really good. In fact, speaking of Amazon, the series Blade Runner 2099 is moving forward. Jeremy Podesta, who worked on Game of Thrones, will be directing the first episode and will be an executive director on the series.
Okay, yeah.
So 50 years after the last Blade Runner movie, it is just something set in the Blade Runner universe. Wholly original, wholly its own thing.
Love it. Yeah, let's get more cyberpunk in our lives. We all need these lessons these days because we're about to start living it.
We are not really already deep into a cyberpunk dystopia. Like, yeah. We need to shape
there.
Up.
Like our healthcare is a bad joke. Like, that's some cyberpunk shit.
Yep.
Like we're getting there.
All right, let's jump into some video game news. Warner Brothers Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League game has been delayed due to negative fan reception at its reveal in February. Sources are saying they are still trying to release this year. However, the overlying issues that fans complained about was that it was another in a long stream of live service games.
Right. To quote an internet celebrity, Scallop earlier said that this game has been in development for nearly 8 years. It may be at this point well and truly cooked. Like, this game has been made. It has come out of the oven. And it's ready to go. They were ready to release this shit. Mm-hmm. And then when they showed it to everyone, they were like, ew, no. Mm-hmm. So what do we do now? What can we change about this game now that isn't like fundamental to the game's design and still make a good game out of it that people want to play?
Let's keep in mind the fact that this game is the last appearance as Kevin Conroy Batman.
Oh, God. And we were all so excited for it until we saw the gameplay. Yeah. We were like, yeah, here we go. Kevin Conroy's last game. It's by Rocksteady doing some like Suicide Squad shit. And then we're going to have evil Batman with Kevin Conroy. It's going to be amazing. And then it's a live service game with like microtransactions and fucking like a Diablo style, like incremental loot upgrades.
Yep.
Fucking kill me. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to do that with my Diablo character, my last Epoch character, my Path of Exile character. I don't want to do that with King Shark or Harley Quinn.
I need to upgrade my fins.
No, it's not even that. That would be a thing. It's like, if he could, oh no, that's not good, because like Marvel's Avengers did that too. It's like, let's upgrade the Hulk skeleton for this RPG. Fuck you. And the worst part is that it's not even that. The King Shark doesn't upgrade his fins. He upgrades the machine gun he's holding. And I'm just like, why does he have a machine gun?
Right? He's a King Shark!
A machine gun is truly less effective than just a King Shark.
Right? I will trade you 20 machine guns for one King Shark.
Yeah, if you were like, well, here's an arms deal. You can have the case of machine guns or one King Shark and be like, fuck,
King Shark every time! Oh, he's a King Shark!
No way. Stay off the comms and get in our group.
Right? Come the fuck on. It all makes sense. I understand. Fucking fix your game. Good Lord.
Please, please, Rocksteady, fix your game.
Don't let Kevin Conroy go out like this, baby.
I loved every single Batman game from Arkham Asylum, Arkham Knight, Arkham City. These were the best Batman games there have ever been. They were inspiration for the best Spider-Man games we've ever gotten. Sure. These are excellent fucking games. And they spend so much of their time making this live service, not Destiny, with like DC Suicide Squad characters. And like, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, did they think 8 years ago that people wanted this? Because I wouldn't have wanted this then either.
Well, I mean, Hector, we just did an entire episode about why live service games are failing.
We did. And it's because they have always sucked. and here we are, watching one of our most beloved studios with some of the fucking most heartfelt, like, IP voice in history. And it's going to turn out like this. And I'm
don't
so sad.
Do Ron Funches like
please,
that.
Please don't. Please make a good game. I want it to be good.
I swear. I will tell you that I have not really bought DLC in a long time. But if you gave me if the Suicide Squad game was good and you said, all right, here's the deal. For $15, we are going to let you download nothing but an audio pack. And it replaces the voices that we have in game with the voices from the Harley Quinn show.
Oh, yeah.
I would hit that buy button fucking fast.
I would hit that before. Like I would install the game. I would hit the buy button. Then I would hit play.
Yes.
Like absolutely, I will not play the game without this DLC installed.
Right. Game toolmaker Unity has released their 2023 gaming report that summarizes various aspects of the video game industry via discussion with developers. Of note this year was that indie developers are currently trying to ship games in fewer work hours while crunching less and trying to figure out how to get games to market faster. 77% of indie studios said they are choosing to ship games on desktop platforms, while mid and larger studios seem to want to ship on mobile more. Mm. Boy, does this say something about the state of the industry.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's break down the first part. So indie developers want to ship games in fewer work hours.
Good.
While crunching less and trying to figure out how to get games to market faster.
Yeah. And let's not forget, I am 100% in favor of smaller video games made with less hours by developers who are paid more.
Yes.
100%. I'm not even kidding. Mm-hmm. I want worse games made by people who work less and are paid more.
Yep.
Period. That's the state of the industry. That's what I want.
Yep.
I don't want them, the people who get this, to make games for my phone that demand my currency.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to make games that I want to play on a console, on a PC,
mm-hmm.
on a Steam Deck, you know,
all of this makes sense. It seems like the
It's all like if we're gonna do the good things for our developers, I guess we have to make Candy Crush. Like fuck, yeah. Man. The fact
that the AAA and AA developers are going, oh, you know what we need to do, and I get we do live in capitalism. You have to make money.
Yeah,
but mobile is not the way to do it. Star Wars, the last Star Wars game that EA made proved that.
Oh, yeah.
Jedi absolutely. Fallen Order proved when EA was saying all you need to make is multiplayer games that are live service games that people have to pay every month for.
Yeah, they said no. We nickel and dime them, that's the way to go.
Right. And they went, no, we're just going to make a single player Star Wars game. Yeah. And they made a killing off of it.
It was so good. And it was like, and the reviews for it were like, well, honestly, the combat is kind of like if Sekiro is bad. And like it's interesting, but like it's a good Star Wars game about a good character set in a world we like living in. So like this is probably one of the best AAA single player games you've ever played outside of a Dark Souls.
Exactly.
The bar was low and they like shot way above it, and it's still not like one of my top five games ever made, mm-hmm. but it's certainly the best Star Wars game I've played in like a decade.
Right.
And like, yeah, we just want more.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like my favorite example is in 2020, everyone's game of the year was Hades.
Mm-hmm.
Hades, a single player only fucking game, that roguelike. Roguelike that you could spend like 20 hours on and see everything there was.
Yep.
Maybe 30 if you were a little slow, but like gaming wise, not, you know what I'm saying, but like that was everyone's game of the year. Mm-hmm. And that game was created by an indie studio. It is an indie game. It wasn't a AAA price.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a AAA anything. I think it
was 40?
Yeah, it was like 40 bucks.
Yeah.
The studio did it without any moment, any second of crunch.
Mm-hmm.
They did it while demanding their workers take vacations.
Yep.
They did it while demanding their workers not work weekends.
Absolutely.
And they fucking released this game, and it was the best game anyone saw in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
We can do it.
Yeah,
we like follow these models and make games that people will like, and you're good.
Yeah,
like it doesn't have to be Candy Crush. You can have these working conditions and make amazing games that people love. All you have to do is make games that people want
and give a shit about your people.
Yeah, and give a shit about your workers. Let them, let your artists, let your creatives make something that makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this to the end of the world. Again, no spoilers, but the reason The Last of Us was so good as a TV show was because they let Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal understand their characters and make decisions on set about how their characters would react.
Yeah.
And we all responded so well to it. That's all we need.
Yeah.
That's all we need. Is well-paid people making decisions about the art they're creating because they are rested enough and like confident enough in their positions.
Okay, I'm going to say something.
Do what they want to do.
I want to close this discussion here in a second, but I'm going to say something. And I don't want to. I can't. No, James, don't say it out loud. No, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it out loud.
Let's go.
All right, to all of you game studios that are saying, oh no, we don't want our people to unionize.
Oh God.
I'm going to give you the secret right now. if you don't want your people to unionize, treat your people the way they treat people at Supergiant.
Yeah, straight up.
They give them a livable wage. They take care of them. They say, you know, you take the time off, take the PTO, get well rested, do not do crunch, treat your workers like human fucking beings, and I will tell you right now, they will not fucking unionize if you treat them that way.
Yeah, and they'll literally just make good shit because they won't feel like they're under attack financially by working for you.
Right.
Like it's not that difficult of a decision.
It's not rocket science.
No.
It's not even rocket surgery at that point.
Nope. They will do a good job if they feel like they have the space.
I've just given you the secret of how to run a good game dev studio. Yep. Praise me. Here it is.
Yeah. And if you think we're wrong and you think we don't know what we're talking about because we don't make video games and we don't run a studio, ask the fucking CEO.
I'm sorry that I don't make video games, but I'm telling you to take care of other human beings.
Just ask the CEO of Supergiant how he feels about his workers.
Yeah.
And how he made the game of the year of 2020 by everyone's fucking metrics.
Yep. And going from one thing to another, in a move that nobody liked, Square Enix is doubling down on their upcoming NFT-based game, stating there will be over 10,000 characters in the game. Now, before we get into this, I do want to state the decision to make this NFT game, this blockchain game, was made under Square Enix's current president, Yosuke Matsuda.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a huge advocate for NFTs and blockchain games.
Yep.
But it was announced recently that Matsuda would be replaced by Takeshi Kiru in June.
Yep. Yeah, president's out.
So right now they're talking about this NFT game, but all of these bets may be off when this new president comes in.
I would be very, very surprised if that game ever hit the market. Right. Like NFTs have been dead for a while.
Yeah.
One of my favorite examples of this is on a drive home from work, there is a small, maybe like 8x8 NFT, like fucking doodle on the side of a building. And it's obvious it hasn't been taken care of in a while. It's like fading. There's like paint coming down the side of it. It's like cracking. It's no one wants this anymore.
Right.
It's gone and good fucking riddance. And if you want us to like play to earn, you're talking to the wrong people. Right. Like you're literally talking to the wrong people. Maybe our boomer parents would have been into this. But like millennials, even Gen Z are like, no, that's bullshit. Why would I work in my leisure time?
Right.
And the Zoomers are like, are you joking? Like right? What are you doing? Like, we would never, what? like, no, there is no audience for this outside of people who are over invested in cryptocurrency and really need to get out. This exactly. is Matt Damon at the Super Bowl saying, please buy my crypto and these NFTs so that I can cash out and yet you will be left holding my bag.
Yep.
Like that's what these NFT games are. Fuck this. I'm sorry the president of Square Enix bought too many NFTs and now wants to sell them.
Yep.
He's not selling them to us.
Yep. All right, that all sucks. Let's end on a high note. The Strong National Museum of Play has revealed their nominees for the 2023, I can speak, I promise, Video Game Hall of Fame. These games are chosen by criteria like longevity of the game's popularity and their influence on pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give you the nominees for this year.
Okay.
Age of Empires.
Ooh, yeah.
Angry Birds.
Okay.
Barbie Fashion Designer.
Yeah, I had an audience.
Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare 2007.
Oh, like the original Modern Warfare? Yep. Jesus Christ. Yeah, that changed the whole industry.
Computer Space.
Never heard of it.
So Computer Space is, I believe, basically the first arcade game ever.
Oh, like a cabinet game?
Like it is the first.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sounds good.
FIFA 23. That's a weird one. Don't know how I feel about that.
First of all, fuck FIFA, the organization, but like this year's FIFA?
Yeah.
How is that a
I don't understand
game
that
of all
either.
Time? No, we'll talk about it.
GoldenEye 007.
Yeah, obviously.
The Last of Us 2023, which is the original Last of Us. 2013. Yes.
So yeah, Last of Us 2013. Yeah, obviously. It just really... Okay, so like... There are not a lot of metrics on, like, the best video game story ever told. There's actually none. Yeah, opinions vary. Some people would say things like, obviously, Fallout New Vegas. Some people would say a lot of things.
Planescape Torment.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot. There, a lot of CRPGs, a lot of JRPGs. There's a lot of great stories in video games. But going back to, like, Final Fantasy II.
Right.
A lot of great stories in video games. The Last of Us just wrapped up its prestige HBO fucking, like, show that was wildly popular. And that, like, the discourse now is mirroring the discourse we all experienced back in, like, 2013. So, yeah, this game belongs in the Hall of Fame. This is, this is a video game of all
time. We got a couple more to go. NBA 2K.
Sure, whatever.
Quake.
Yeah, Quake, obviously.
Wii Sports.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Wizardry.
Never heard of it.
Wizardry is the game that launched the JRPG franchise. It is a Western-style game based off of D&D that influenced every... It was wildly popular in Japan. And here in America, nobody gave a shit. But in Japan, it was a big deal. And Wizardry is the reason why we have Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest. It is the great, great, great grandfather of JRPGs, even though it comes from a D&D background.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Final Fantasy has always been on, like systems.
Yeah.
Spells all have tiers, you know, like people all have associations.
Yeah.
It's politics. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
But of all these games, if I had to guess, given the current climate, pop culture climate, feel like The Last of Us is really lining this one up.
Yeah, easily. Obviously, GoldenEye 007 for the Nintendo 64 was like a moment in gaming. Before there was Halo, it introduced Americans to like four-player split-screen fucking duels.
Yeah, we're talking that about...
everyone knew about. You ask your average college student in 2003 how they played GoldenEye. They were like Golden Guns or Slappers Only.
Yeah.
And like they all... they would throw out some jargon that someone who'd never played the game would never understand. It's like, dual swaps. Yeah, you know, like you swap your club for your P90, and then you have one of each, and it just makes you more deadly. And anyone who's never played the game is like, what the fuck are you talking about? But anyone who knows what I'm saying is like, GoldenEye.
Yeah.
GoldenEye was my multiplayer before the internet.
Yeah.
GoldenEye is a big one. But The Last of Us, as we're learning, as it's easy for people to say, is probably one of the best video game stories ever told. Because it was told on television to a wild acclaim.
Something like 8.2 million people for the last episode?
Yeah. And that's like, these are fucking ratings numbers. Mm-hmm. And this is for like a Friday only. Like, that's huge. People don't watch TV anymore.
Yeah. All right. So I do want to hear your opinions. If you have an opinion on which one of these should be entering the Video Game Hall of Fame, please hit us up on Twitter at GNGGcast. Mm-hmm. Let me know, please. I'm curious. If you have a different answer than us, then please, like, throw that to me. I'm curious to see what you have.
Oh, yeah.
But that's everything we have for the news this week. But stick with us as we get into our main topic in the Boss Room.
Boss Room.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's time for the Boss Room, our main topic that is sometimes related to the news, sometimes not. It's been about a month since Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania came out, so it is time for us to talk about it. And we are going to be talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and that means spoilers ahead as we get into it.
Full spoilers.
Let's start with the basic question here, Hector. Hector, what did you think? Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
A title that is far too long.
It is pretty long, and I mean, it's like comic book long. I'm okay with long titles.
You're a length, not girth person when it comes to titles? Correct.
Yeah, I mean, girth is fine, too. I mean, yeah. Avengers Endgame, that's a girthy title.
That is a girthy title.
I was happy to accept the girth.
Yeah.
But, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. What can I say? I don't want to come out negative.
Sure.
So I'm going to start positive. Paul Rudd, amazing.
Sure.
Paul Rudd is good. Paul Rudd does good shit. Makes good stuff. Loved it. Loved him. This movie was incredibly mid. This movie, I enjoyed it while I was there, although I didn't enjoy everything about it. And like, you know, like your short story shorter, I don't feel like I'll ever need to watch it again. Like, and weirdly, that's been my take with most of the Ant-Man movies, even though I liked them at the time. I think the best Paul Rudd and Ant-Man have ever been are when they're written by the Russo brothers in Endgame.
Right.
Or Captain America Civil War, you know, like that was good Ant-Man because all the jokes were there. Paul Rudd got to do his thing, but he wasn't by himself.
Mm-hmm.
There were stakes. This movie felt strangely written. Like, you know, I don't know where to go from there, you know, until your next talking point. But like this movie felt kind of strange.
It did feel strange. This was supposed to be our big entrance into the next phase of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And everything about it, the acting was great.
Yeah, I like
it. It was good.
Yeah, there's, you know, with, you know, Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, you had Evangeline Lilly, who I still believe is fucking wasted on Ant-Man because right. She's a good actress and they never give her anything to do.
I want to make a reference here.
Mm.
Have you ever watched a TV show? I think about this most when I think about anime, but in shows in general, a good show that you are addicted to watching week to week and you get a filler episode.
Yep.
This movie felt like a filler episode.
Straight up. Yeah. We watch the movie and we get to enjoy some like cool Ant-Man stuff, sure. Right? And we get to go into the quantum realm and we realize there's a whole world down there that we could explore, but we know we're not going to.
Yeah.
Like we know we're gonna be there with Ant-Man for this movie and we just may never fucking see it again. It's not gonna be important. But it felt like we were just trying to introduce the audience to Kang.
Right. When I ask people, what is the most important thing in Iron Man 3? Oftentimes, if they respect the movie as much as I do, we'll say something like, well, Tony Stark, not moving past, but healing from some of his PTSD.
Yeah, he's got trauma. Like, he went to space. Yeah. He got pulled through a portal and he thought he was going to die.
So him not overcoming his trauma, but facing it and moving forward in a positive light, right? That's something that people will say when they say that.
Good shit.
You know, what happens, you know, what's a big pivotal scene in Captain America. It's, you know, when they're sitting down together and saying, you know, do you want to kill Nazis?
Yeah.
Right. Do you want to shoot Nazis? And he goes, no, I don't want anybody to die.
Yeah. I don't want anyone to die.
Like that's a pivotal moment in a movie in Captain America. Mm-hmm. When you ask somebody what's a pivotal moment in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, they're going to say the post-credit scene.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of been, and it sucks that Paul Rudd is Ant-Man because, like, they don't write him with enough pathos to, like, have a thing. I mean, we introduce this character by being like, oh, it's bad that you were a thief and you just got out of jail and your wife's married to a cop and they take care of your daughter and they both love you and it's a very awesome relationship, but, like, also, like stop being a thief. And then the movie starts and it's like, hey, we need you to thief something.
Right.
Yeah. It's rough. And he never really gets like a modus. One of the best lines Ant-Man ever had was when he was in prison and he said, Hank Pym always said never to trust a Stark. Like that's right. the most character building line we've ever gotten from Ant-Man besides him loving his daughter and really liking Evangeline Lilly, which like get in line, dude.
The whole movie. Yeah. I mean, you said it when you said like, this is feels mid. It does. I sat through the movie and you know what? I try to be as positive as I can about these things, but I could not shake the fact that this was all green screen.
Yeah, like
it was painfully green screen.
Yeah, like we were talking up the volume a lot when it first came out with The Mandalorian. They obviously used it a lot in Loki.
Yeah.
But we've seen it more and more. And there are good ways to use it and there are bad ways to use it. And we see at the beginning of Thor Love and Thunder a bad way to use it where everything just kind of looks fake.
Yeah.
And then we've seen really good ways to use it later in that exact same movie.
Yeah.
Like they're figuring it out. Mandalorian almost always does a great job using the volume. But like this movie that took place entirely in the quantum realm and was filled to the brim with like crazy fantastic characters, they never felt like they were grounded in like any significant way. I am the last person in anything to complain about CG because I know that it's hard work.
It is hard.
And I know so that difficult. I am not an artist.
Animators are so in demand right now.
Yeah, I can't fucking draw. Yeah. And all I can think when I see most CG is like, I hope that guy made $1 million. And I know he probably made shit money that year.
Yeah.
Like it's sad. I love CG. I love the artists. I have the utmost respect for them. But at the same time, there was too much of it going on in this movie. And the best parts of Ant-Man have always been like his like crew. Mm-hmm. And like they weren't in this movie. And Cassie.
Right.
And like nothing against the actor that played Cassie, but like there's been too many actors to play that role. And yeah. Now we're just disconnected from it.
Yeah. And then there's the MODOK of it.
Oh, so what do we say about MODOK? What do we say about MODOK? I don't know, man. I have a soft spot.
MODOK was a brilliantly written character, but there was no way they were going to make that character look good.
No, like, and that's the thing. What they did with MODOK, right?
It was interesting because, like, you take a the big bad from the first one and make him become MODOK in the quantum realm. Great. Storyline-wise, makes complete sense. When MODOK shows up and has the cool mask on, you're like, oh, this is kind of cool. I dig this. And then the mask comes off and it's like,
yeah,
that's a big oof, my dude.
And then he just looks like an actor whose face was blown up in CG to fill like a frame.
And he had some of the best lines of the movie. Like the whole
he's one of the funniest parts of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's, oh God.
The whole exchange at the end where it's just like.
And then it sounds like a dick thing to do. It's like, you don't have to be a dick, but he's like, it's too late for me. I'm already such a dick.
Right. Like that whole exchange that was so funny. Good.
That was good. That was a great exchange.
And then you're just like. But the rest of everything else is bad. Why is it bad? And I don't know. I just sit here and I watch that movie and I'm not mad that I watched it.
No, but there were just so many parts of it that were like, okay, I'm going to say something and like, it's not super nice. This is literally the worst performance by and the worst use of Bill Murray I have ever seen in a film.
Yeah.
And that hurts me to say because I fucking love Bill Murray for a lot of reasons. But like, wasted. Absolutely wasted. Given shit lines in a shit story with a character that could have been done far more justice. And it's not like Bill Murray did a bad job. He was obviously just reading the lines, but he looked bored.
Yeah,
he looked bored the entire time. He looked happy to be leaving the screen while he was being eaten on, in the movie. Like, I don't know. Like the whole the Bill Murray of it all really disappointed me.
Yeah.
To talk a little bit about MODOK, I really love Corey Stoll. Corey Stoll was in the first Ant-Man movie as. Like, you know, what was he, a scorpion?
No, it's Yellowjacket.
Yellowjacket, thank you. He was a Yellowjacket. He tried to kill Cassie in her bedroom. That guy is a good actor, and he gives good villain.
He does.
And at the exact same time, he was filming season 2 of Guillermo del Toro's The Strand on
FX.
FX.
One of the best. That show
good
is,
fucking
go fucking
show.
Watch that.
And he is good in it.
Yeah.
And they literally wrote a plot line into that show where he shaves his head because he was doing a fucking Marvel movie.
Yep.
And I respected that shit, and he was good all the way to the end of that show.
Mm-hmm.
Good character. They made him a big CG balloon so that he could be MODOK. And that was sad too.
Yep.
Because like you didn't get a lot out of him, but you still got some of the best lines in the movie from him.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the best lines of the movie not Bill Murray's? Why aren't they at the very least Paul Rudd's? Mm-hmm. They were given to MODOK, a character who it was kind of painful to look at.
Yep.
And like this movie felt confused for a good bit of it. There were some really good moments. There were some heartfelt stuff when Cassie learns to do giant Ant-Man.
Yeah, sure.
And like they like meet as giant ant people, and he's like, "Oh my God, you grew up! Like, right. You know how to do Ant-Man." I feel like I'm hugging Godzilla, and they're both still like subatomic size.
Yeah,
but like they're bigger than everyone. Like that was a good moment. That was fun. I enjoyed that. But it felt like these moments were moments, and not part of the story, and I have zero reason to feel like I need to see that again.
This was a movie for, by, about Kang.
Yeah.
To let everybody know.
Hey, Kang's the bad guy.
Kang's the bad guy.
Kang's the bad guy, guys. There's a lot of Kang, and right? He's the bad guy.
You know what the beauty of Thanos' reveal at the end of the Avengers was? That we didn't know.
Yeah.
We got to the post-credit scene, and we got a little tasting of Thanos. In every movie, we got a little taste. A little tease. We got Kang in Loki, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, get it. That's fine. But this movie, because it this movie was more based less around being around Ant-Man and more being about setting up the big boss for the next phase.
Yeah,
and because of that, it is not a good Ant-Man movie because we're spending too much time setting up the big bad.
Yeah, like imagine if we made a movie in like 2015. And it was like a Captain America movie, right? Mm. But we just like take him to another planet for plot reasons. And he just kind of has to fight Thanos, but right. Like a different Thanos.
Right.
And like, that's how we introduce Thanos.
Right.
Fucking weird. And it's probably bad weird. And probably not a good decision.
Yeah.
That's not how you do the big villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like just having him being beaten by Ant-Man and like the push. And not only that, but like we met Kang and Loki. And that was an excellent introduction.
Yeah.
Because we got like an interesting Kang. We got like we didn't have him like express his power or like be fully combative. He was just kind of like interested in what was going on around him in the multiverse.
Yeah.
And then we get rid of him and then we move on as if like, wow, dodge that bullet. Glad that's not going to be a problem ever again. Multiverse is big. We'll probably never see him again. No, he's coming back.
Like
that was
a
good way to do Kang.
Yeah.
Putting him in this movie, as much as I love that actor and as much as I can't wait to see him in Creed 3, like this was not how you do Kang.
Yeah.
And he is giving his all, and he steals every scene his head. Even opposite Michelle Pfeiffer, he's like just fucking killing it. And he's probably the greatest character in the movie as far as like acting and everything else goes. And it just feels like a bad introduction to Kang.
It does. It does. I know that we're being hard on the movie, and that's
because our expectations
are high.
Yeah, and it, I know it's cliche to say, like, I say bad things because I love the series so much, but honestly, like, that's where we are.
Yeah.
I would like these, and, you know, they've hit really big heights, and maybe not every movie lives up to Endgame or Infinity War.
Yeah.
But, like, we can do better than this.
We can, absolutely.
We can absolutely do better than this. Paul Rudd deserved better. Mm. Michelle Pfeiffer deserved better. The writing for her character was fucking awful.
Yeah.
A good friend of ours was like making fun of it last night. We were talking and he's like, she spends a lot of the movie talking about how she can't talk about what happened, even though it's immediately relevant to what's happening right now.
Right.
She's like, I'll tell you later. And it's like, we need to know right now. God right. damn it. What are you afraid of?
Right.
Us this getting worse? Tell us what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was just painful writing for excellent actors. And that's kind of how you can sum up most of the movie, which is a little sad.
It is.
It's not the fucking CW. We're not there. It's just... It's
still better than the CW.
It's still much better than the CW, but it is less than we feel it should be.
Mm.
And because we're usually so nice, you should really listen to us, Marvel.
And, right.
And like, just try a little harder next time.
Yeah. I want to know what your opinions about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania are. Please go ahead and hit us up at GNGGcast on Twitter. Please let me know how you felt about the movie. I will talk to you till I'm blue in the face about it. Don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg to become a patron of our show. You can go to facebook.com/GNGGcast where you can chat with us. Man, we have a lot of feelings about Marvel stuff, and there's another movie right around the corner.
Guardians
3.
As much as we've talked about how, like, outside of Wakanda Forever, Phase 4 has been pretty fucking mid, I cannot wait for Guardians 3. Yep. James Gunn, in my opinion, has never made a bad superhero movie, so I cannot wait to see Guardians 3, because it's his last... absolutely his last fucking Marvel movie because he just took over for DC. He's got fucking Superman to make.
Yep.
So here we go. Like last strap Marvel in. Hurrah.
You're going to laugh. You're going to cry.
Yeah.
You're going to love a raccoon.
Yep.
But until next time, for Hector, this is James.
And for James, this is Hector.
Everyone, good night.
And good game.